Hey, it's Dola White, and this is the Dola White Podcast. My guest today is Melissa Bentor-Carnegie, founder of Sex Positive Families, here to talk about how, when, and why it's important to have realistic conversations about sex with your kids. Now, a lot of us grew up hearing things like, wait until you get married, and not in this house. So those things may be the default when it comes to talking about sex with our own children. And although they may be the most comfortable, they're not in the best interest of the child. So with that said, let's do it. Let's get fucking uncomfortable here. Welcome to the Dola White Podcast.
This is not live. It's completely recorded.
Broadcasting from one of the top recording studios in all of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's not true at all. I'm probably at home doing this.
He's been called one of the greatest thinkers of his time.
Literally no one has ever called me that. I do kind of agree with it, though. Right here.
A 2017 recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's just a flat out lie.
Talking politics, community, race, religion, entertainment, sports, and whatever the fuck else. Yeah. It's the Dola White Podcast.
Episode 13 now of the Dola White Podcast. My guest today, I'm very excited for my guest today, Melissa Bentor-Carnegie, founder of Sex Positive Families. Welcome in. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited for you doing this. This may be less of a podcast and more of a one-on-one coaching session of how to talk to my daughter about sex when the time is right. So we can start there. My daughter's 3 years old. At what point do we start having these conversations with her?
So now.
Okay.
And let me explain why, because that can feel jarring, because so many of us adults that are parenting today or raising children today didn't experience early ongoing conversations when it comes to things about bodies and sex and relationships and all of that. A lot of us had like a sink or swim experience when it came to these things. And so it becomes harder to duplicate something that you didn't have for yourself. But at the same time, many of us have experienced the effects, the repercussions, the consequences of not having support early and ongoing, not having the education, not having the context and the tools that can help us be successful when it comes to making decisions about things like sex. So with three, the really super cool thing is that you're really developing bonds and a relationship that is rooted in trust and connection. And those things are part of the foundation that makes it possible for when they are navigating sexual decision-making on their own later, that they will be able to draw from within that relationship, which again, so many of us may not have had. And we became those teenagers that were taking risks, that were experimenting, that were like bucking up against our parents and all that stuff. But if you start early and start talking about things like bodies and about relationships, the dynamics, right? Like helping them understand friendship and consent and ways that we basically navigate other people in this world, those are foundational things that relate to sex later.
So one thing I think my wife and I learned from you from the get-go is not saying words like hoo-ha when referring to her vagina, or if you have a male, you don't refer to his penis as his pee-pee or anything else like that. Can you break down why it's important to use scientific terms from day one?
So again, many of us grew up with these euphemisms, with these nicknames. That's shame. We do this activity a lot in sex ed, whether it's with young people or with adults, you know, we have them come up with as many words that you can think of for different body part terms. And we might say vagina, or we might say breasts, or we might say penis, and give them a minute. And in a minute's time, 20, 30, 40, 50 words can come up. But you say, how about nose? How many words in a minute can you come up with for nose? What about ear? What about leg? And it's silent for a whole minute because people are like, But consistently, genital terminology, anything that relates to what many of us learned are private parts, we have a lot of nicknames. And again, that's the shame. And we don't want to pass that shame onto the next generation. We want them to be able to speak confidently about their bodies. Because if there's anything that's ever going on with their body, if anyone's ever doing something with their body or trying to have them do something with another person's body related to any of those parts, we want them to be able to speak up, to be able to confidently communicate that. Plenty of cases, unfortunately, exist when things get taken to the legal realm. If a child is reporting things related to their cookie or flower, those are other things. Those are literal other objects. And it becomes a lot harder to ensure that there's clear communication, especially when they're younger. We want to equip them with the language that ultimately will keep them safer and more body confident and aware.
I remember when I think I was probably 6 years old. My parents read me a book called Where Did I Come From? I'm not sure if you've ever heard of that
book.
Yeah,
I've seen that one.
I'm not shaming my parents or anything like that, but I feel like they read me that book and then we didn't talk about shit about sex for like, you know, 10 more years or whatever.
They did their job.
Right.
Like, in their minds.
He understands now. He gets it. We're done here. But I feel like it's probably important to continuously have these talks with children throughout the years from childhood to adolescence, even through adulthood. Talk about things that we just didn't talk about in my house, like masturbation. There's shame in masturbation. I mean, still to this day, personally been masturbating since I was probably 11 or 12 years old. I still hide out and build a fort whenever I do it now. I still to this day don't want to be caught. Yeah. I don't think anybody wants to be caught, but maybe that's not the healthiest way. I don't know. I'm asking, like, what are these talks that we need to have with our children when it comes to just filling those gaps throughout the years?
Well, I love talking about masturbation. It's one of my favorite topics to talk about and to teach. I teach virtual puberty workshops to families, so to tweens and their trusted adults. And masturbation, again, because there's so much shame and mixed messaging related to the values associated with that. But essentially, it's pleasure with yourself. And it's a way to get to know your own body. And when you know what feels good, you also can know what does not. And that keeps you safer. And so to be able to equip a young person with the awareness of their own body and permission to get to know their own body is so powerful. And I've got three kids, one that's an adult, a 21-year-old, and I have an 11-year-old and a 7-year-old bonus son. My 21-year-old is a woman now, and she was the inspiration for this work. And so being able to raise her to have the tools and the confidence that I didn't have because no one was talking to me about any of these things. So I was doing so much in private and in secrecy and sneaking around, you know, because I had picked up the message that these things are bad or shameful or not right, or there must, and then therefore there must be something wrong with me. I must be bad or wrong or shameful. And again, for just exploring my own body, I never wanted her to feel that way, because ultimately what can happen in that scenario is you become, as a young person who goes through that, you can become disconnected from your body, disconnected from an awareness of the sensations of your own body. And then when you get into sexual decision making and into relationships, you might become dependent on someone else telling you what feels good or what does not for you. And that makes you more vulnerable to abuse or to unhealthy relational dynamics or bad sex. And when you ask yourself, do I want my child to have bad sex? It's not a rite of passage. It's not like everyone just has to have bad sex or bad sexual experiences or unwanted or unpleasurable sexual experiences. So a lot of times it's thinking, what do I want? What do I hope? What do I envision for my young person? Maybe we can come up with tons of ideas when it comes to academics, when it comes to their career choices, when it comes to their family dynamics. We have to include their sexuality and their sexual decision-making and their sexual opportunities and their identity within that as well. It's a whole human that we're raising.
When it comes to things like masturbation, or even to having what has been known as over the years as the talk, where do babies come from? What is the timeline for that? Like, when do I sit down with my daughter and say, hey, this is where babies come from? And then later on down the line say, hey, it's okay to explore yourself. This is masturbation. It's normal. What age range do you recommend here?
Yeah, so there's no set age. Many times it's situational. Your three-year-old may have come across other people that are pregnant that may have sparked questions about what's going on with that person's body, or we're expecting a new baby in our family. Why? What's that all about? Where's that coming from? What's about to happen, right? These are opportunities. And so if we shut those curiosities down, or we don't create a space that's safe for them to be curious, then again, that has longer term effects and puts silence and shame around those topics. So it could again be as early as 2 in some cases where those questions come up. Same thing when it comes to self-pleasure, masturbation. It's very common for children at younger ages to self-soothe and to stimulate their own body, just like they might suck their thumb or they might kind of play with their hair. Same thing can go with their genitals. The genitals are highly sensitive. They have thousands of nerve endings and they're theirs. They belong to them. And so, you know, we can celebrate great when babies find their hands or their feet, but then all of a sudden, if mm-hmm. they find that penis that's sitting there waving at them, you know, then that's a problem. That's a trigger for a lot of people. And again, we want to disrupt that. And we want to see that's a body part that they should get to know, that they should be able to name, and that they should have a comfort around and awareness then that you can build over time in terms of safety as it relates to their genitals and these areas that we will keep more private for safety reasons. So everything just kind of builds on each thing. It isn't just one talk. It's not right. a one sit down, one and done, or hand them the book and run away. That is not the method. Because if they don't get the sense that they can turn to you when they have questions or when something unsafe or uncomfortable happens, that typically not what our goal is, right? We want to be able to be available and accessible.
I completely agree with that. And I think it was maybe a year or two ago, somebody had recommended getting consent from your child before changing their diaper. And I remember a lot of people saying like, I'm never going to do that, blah, 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 blah. And I remember thinking to me, it was like, you're making sure that your child gives consent before somebody takes off the last layer of clothing before they reach their genitals. It was never about the power struggle between the parent and the child. It was about just simply getting your child used to saying, yes, it is okay if you take this piece of clothing off of me, correct?
Yeah. So there are some misconceptions around that. And I love how you bring that up in terms of that last piece of clothing piece. And it's important to know that, okay, so technically, no, it's not that you're going to ask permission of your 4-month-old, 12-month-old, may I please change your diaper now? At those younger stages, you are responsible for their care. They're not able to manage that independently and effectively in that way. Really, it's about guiding. We're guiding their care, and we're not only creating those habits for them in terms of the language that we use around consent and permission, but it's also practice, good practice and habits for ourselves as we say these things out loud. So it's more that I'm going to change your diaper. I'm going to clean your penis. I'm going to clean your vulva. So you're guiding and you're letting them know. So that gets them used to recognizing that, yes, I need to be informed and aware of what is happening to my body at all times. So it isn't technically that you're asking and waiting for those activities of care. For activities of care, same thing like getting into a car seat. If you got to go somewhere, wearing a seatbelt. If you know that is what's needed for safety, or holding hands before crossing the street. We're not going to wait or negotiate or wait for permission for something that is safety oriented. There are ways that we can approach those in a collaborative way that, again, invites their cooperation and their collaboration and their being informed of what's happening.
Agreed. Obviously, we've talked about my daughter here, and one day she's going to be a teenager. And there's a lot of sexist stigmas in this country about men who are sexually active and women who are sexually active. I don't want my daughter to feel like if she does something that she wants to do, that there is some kind of negative stigma attached to that. When she's a young adult, I want her to do what it is she wants to do and have those experiences. I had those experiences, and I feel like having those experiences at the age that I did was a good experience for me and prepared me for the rest of my life. I want my daughter to have those same experiences confidently without feeling like there's something wrong with her having those experiences. I don't know how to say that to her when the time is right, right? How do you recommend teaching that? Like, hey, it's okay. Your body's going to feel these things. You're going to want to do these things. And these things are okay. Whereas I feel like growing up, it was like, don't do that until you're married. Meanwhile, I didn't get married until I was almost 37 years old. So can you imagine had I waited until I was 37? I don't know that I would have made it.
I love it. You did say exactly what you could say when you start to have those more advanced conversations. When you think about it, the early conversations that you are likely, it sounds like, having with her now, at 3, helping her to understand that her body, her choice, that this is her body, and these are the amazing things that her body can do, and that she has the right to experience joy and fulfillment and pleasure and to explore whatever activities. Right now, the activity isn't sex, but it's the same framing that you will do later on. And you already did it when you explained it for yourself. And you'll be in practice, both of you, in being able for her to feel empowered because you've raised her in a way where she knows she has your support. She knows that she has a right to her pleasures, to her joy, to what fulfills her. Then she also knows that if she has any questions or she has any stumbling blocks or there's anything that she's comes up against that she's unsure about or feels unsafe, that you all are the people that she can turn to for support. What many of us didn't have, and thus it becomes hard for us to think, oh gosh, or we get afraid. We're afraid that some of the things that we might have experienced or that our friends back then experienced, that that might happen to us. And so we've got to try to control the situation, you know, or them in order to protect them. So it's important for us. We're laying those foundations by having these early conversations. It's about the relationship that will ultimately transition, no matter what the topic turns into. So at one point, it will be sex. And even in the earlier times, when you're talking with her about where babies come from, and then you say, well, sex is one way that babies can come into the world. And well, what's sex? Sex is bodies and pleasure. It's something that adults or older teens who feel ready for it may do. And then that could lead to, well, is that something that you've done? Yes, I have had sex. You know, just really simply, right? And that's something that you might choose to do when you get older. And when you get old enough to feel ready to do that, I want to be here to support you in terms of any questions that you might have. It's a big decision, and I want you to feel prepared.
I want to be able to say all of that to my child. I'm definitely going to try my best. But
we got this on recording, so you right. can play it back.
But I think just having to kind of reparent yourself around sex a little bit mm-hmm. is tough, right? Like it's, mm-hmm. you still feel that same embarrassment talking to your kids about it as you did when your parents were talking to you about it. And I don't want my daughter to feel that way about me. So I have to, you know, break those cycles myself. And I'm aware.
Well, let me challenge you on this. Because one thing that is so, so valuable is authenticity and vulnerability and honesty, right? Okay, that was three things. So three things that all relate to each other, right? And I did listen to the last podcast episode with you and Kenya. So it sounds like you all are on board when it comes to just the values around being your authentic self. So that's no different than the relationship that you bring and can have with a young person that, again, many of us didn't experience. We right. may have experienced adults who were like, had to be the superheroes who never felt feelings and, you know, who always knew the answers. And oh my gosh, that is such an unrealistic expectation that has set many of them up for different mental health challenges or feeling like they weren't good enough as parents. So the best thing that we can do is be honest. And so that might be saying, I'm feeling a little uncomfortable. There's something I want to talk about because it's important and I want you to feel prepared, and I'm feeling a little nervous about it. And why is that? Well, because when I was younger, no one talked to me about these things. And so it's hard for me to sometimes figure out what to say. And then you transition into what you want to talk about. I want to talk about sex, you know, or I want to talk about relationships, or I want to talk about whatever. So don't feel like you have to pretend like you're not nervous or pretend like you know everything. And if there's anything that you don't have an answer to or that you're not feeling sure of, they ask you a question, or if a topic's brought up and you're like, then you can say, that's a great question. I'm so glad you asked. I'm not sure. Let's look it up. Or I love that question. I'm not quite ready to answer that at this moment. Can we talk about this tonight? Or this really great book that I found. Can we read about this later tonight? Because that'll help me feel more confident talking about it. We just gotta be honest.
So here's something that I'm preparing for one day, and I don't know where I stand on this. My daughter will eventually be a teenager. She'll have a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a significant other to come to the house. And at that point, I remember when I was in high school, and not that I was dating too heavily. I was an awkward high schooler, so I didn't have too many options then. But I remember if I were to bring a girl to the house, you know, they can't spend the night. You can't be in the bedroom with them. If you are, the door's got to be open. Obviously, because my parents didn't want me having sex in their house, right? While I do understand that, I don't know if that feels like I am in some way shaming sex if I tell my daughter, don't have sex in this house. I don't want to shame her for having sex in the house.
Where do you want her to have sex?
I don't know.
The car? I guess, under the bleachers? Does she get a hotel room? What do you want her to do?
This is why you're here. Is that shaming sex if I say, hey, none of that in the house? That's shaming sex, correct?
Well, I think it's not so much about shaming sex. I think the more impactful thing is like it's shaming her for having sex, mm-hmm. right? Earlier, what you said is that you want her to have experiences that might include sex when she's a teenager, like mm-hmm. you may have had when you were a teenager, right? So we want to make sure we're in alignment with mm-hmm. what we're feeling and thinking and saying, right? Mm-hmm. So then really do answer the question, where do you want her to have sex?
I would probably prefer it be, I guess, in the house, because okay. that would be a safer place, I would think. All right.
It's important that we think things through. So you just said that you feel confident that your home is a safer place. Why is it safer than any other place that she could have sex at that time?
Because my wife or myself or the dogs would be, you know, there if something got out of hand.
There's a lot that could be in that, right?
Right.
We'll just say, so it sounds like you feel like you have a good support system if she needed you all for any reason, right?
Yes.
That all sounds sound to me. So is the issue really about where's
it's
the issue,
me, right?
Right?
Yeah. It's about me. Okay.
So thinking to yourself, just like if you do want her to have a fulfilling experiences, have safe, fulfilling experiences, and to know that she has your support, I think that creating a space where she feels safe to be able to have home as a place for her sexual experiences, if she chooses, because again, there's a huge assumption that can happen with parents who may have had different experiences growing up is that, oh, you know, just because I did this or all my friends did this, my kids are going to do this too. What we often find when families are having conversations early and ongoing about these in a positive, shame-free way is that young people tend to delay their first sexual experiences because they're given the information to make informed choices. That's the thing that so many of us didn't have. And so we were left to our own devices. We were being risky. We were accepting whatever gossip or whatever like trash myths were being thrown around by our peers or by the media or television, whatever, right? And that's not the foundation that you're setting for her. So she's likely going to be a lot less awkward. because of the foundation and the great parenting that you all are doing with her. So yes, it means you've got to sacrifice being awkward trying to achieve this kind of parenting. Tell me if I'm lying. Is she a confident three-year-old?
She's a confident three-year-old, yes. She is a confident.
Why would that all of a sudden change? You all have built that foundation to get her to these 3 years. That is going to continue. Another key piece of this is a lack of trust, not just related to our child and their decisions, but it's ourselves. When we are saying, I don't trust that I will be able to be a reliable, supportive resource for her when she's a teenager. That's a thing that I like to challenge.
Going back to what you kind of just said was kind of along these lines. I know that scientifically it is proven that school systems or states that teach abstinence have higher levels of teen pregnancy and STDs, things of that nature. Whereas people that have realistic conversations, right, a lower rate of that. And it's because of what you're saying. Sex gets built up into this thing that you're not supposed to do. And there's something about that with human beings that makes us want to explore it more. Whereas if you're having constant, realistic conversations, maybe that wonder isn't there as much. Another thing that I've seen that you guys teach is that I think a lot of us, especially that grew up in somewhat religious households, sex is to be used to make children. And that's it. And I've seen a couple posts from you guys where you're like, nope, sex is supposed to be pleasurable too. And it's okay if you enjoy it and tell your kids it's okay if they enjoy it too.
And you better enjoy it. It's right. Like, you better enjoy it. And if you don't, stop, drop, and roll out of the situation. Talk about it. We need to reconvene because that's the thing. We've just, too many of us on this earth have, again, we've had bad sex. We've had unsafe encounters, and it ain't all about whether you wore a condom or not. We deserve, as humans, and as humans, we are wired for connection and touch, intimacy, sexual connection. These are all at many of our disposal and they're available to us. And so we deserve to have the information that helps us to do this in an informed way. But yes, from a gatekeeper perspective, there are a lot of sex ed programs that are out here in these United States streets. Their goal is to try to control and try to prevent, but we can't prevent. We can influence when it comes to other people and their decisions. And so it's about knowing our influence and helping young people, providing them with the tools so that they can be successful. The same way we're providing them with career tools, we're providing them with all of these other skills and things that we spend years building. We can't go silent when it comes to the most critical skills to being a human being as it relates to our bodies and our decision-making and our lives.
I do want to talk to you also about LGBTQ issues. I still see a lot of homophobia, especially like on my Facebook timeline. And one thing I always see people say is, what am I going to tell my kids? And I'm like, with homosexuality, I feel like it's easy. My daughter can understand that some men like women, some men like men, some women like men, some women like women. However, there are a lot of other people that identify identify differently, how do you recommend breaking down and making those easier to explain to a child?
It would be the same concept. I personally am someone that identifies as non-binary. It's not something that I was given the language at a young age to be able to know, but I knew that I didn't really fit into boy, girl. So I was called tomboy, these other terms that in our society have come up with when you don't quite fit into right. these categories. Once as an adult, I came to understand more of the amazing terms when it comes to identity. And then when I came to understanding non-binary, I was like, yes, that very much feels like me. It's challenging though in our society because we are a very binary society. Mm-hmm. You know, you go into your stores, you know, to go buy things and your toys, your clothes, your hygiene products, all of these things are gendered in a very binary way. These are for men or women or boys or girls, and they're literal things that don't correlate with gender. So it's socialization. Capitalism benefits every time we buy into all of these restricting identities and limiting beliefs about who we can be. So back to children, same thing. You know, children can understand that some people identify as girl, some people identify as boy, some people identify as neither, some people are non-binary. So we have to just give them the language. Some people are trans. Well, what does trans mean? Okay, well, being transgender can mean that a person, when they're born, they could be born with a penis, and a doctor could guess that they're a boy because they have a penis. When that young person starts to grow, they don't feel very much like boy. They feel like girl, and that's how they identify. So transgender can be someone who may have been assigned or given a certain gender by other people at some point, and then they realize they know themselves best, and then they say, no, that's not me. This is who I am. So there are ways that we can break all of this down. It becomes easier the more that we've broken it down for ourselves, and the more that we truly liberate ourselves and recognize that humans exist across a spectrum. And that involves the way our bodies can form and can look. That involves how we can identify and who we can choose to live, love, partner with, and relate to in the world.
I saw Dwayne Wade when he stuck up for Zaya the way he did. And I was somebody that was like, I understand his stand, because as a parent, you want the one safe space in the world for your kids. If my child is going to feel safe anywhere, it's going to be with myself and my wife. I feel like when you identify as something other than man or woman, when you leave my house, you're going to deal with a lot of shit.
It's scary. Yeah.
Yeah. And the one place you're not going to deal with that shit is in my house. You're going to show up as is. I remember having those arguments with people because people were like, not in my house, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, the second your kid is old enough to leave, they're leaving, and you're never going to have a real relationship with your child. For me, it's I want her to never have to, quote unquote, come out of the closet with me. No questions asked for me. I support and love you. I feel like too many people have those negative stereotypes, and then they feel like if their child identifies as, then those negative stereotypes look back on them. I honestly feel like if you ask some people, would you rather have your child identify as this, that, or the third, or be a murderer? A lot of people would literally accept their murderous child over a child that identifies differently than what you want them to. Why are we so transphobic, homophobic, everything?
It's all conditioning. When I say that, I mean like in religion, white supremacy, they're at the foundation of all of these constructs and how they ultimately are treated in the world. Again, because we're humans wired for connection, there becomes a fear of disconnection, a fear of isolation, a fear of ostracization. And all of those things have been constructed over time to be the consequence of not walking the line of falling into man, woman, heteronormative, all of these things. You have to participate in these systems in this one certain way in order to receive acceptance. And so, yes, obviously, if you've been indoctrinated into those beliefs, then you can feel like there are literal texts, like books, and I've been taught all of this, and you're going to go to hell. And all of these things, they're constructed, they're taught. And so it can be challenging to unlearn those things, because then if those aren't true, then who am I? What am I? What is true, right? Because this is what people get born into. You know, we talk about sex assigned at birth. There's religion assigned at birth. All of these constructs ultimately assigned at birth. And we either can choose over time to continue to agree with them, to continue to believe them and to enable or perpetuate them, or we do the brave work of having to say, I don't think that's true for me, or I don't think that's true for the world. And it's harder, again, to go against a grain or, you know, what's been presented, but it's not ultimately a choice, you know, when it comes to these identities, just the same as folks can feel like, well, you know, the default is heterosexual or the default is a binary, you know, gender identity. That's not true. You know, so I love hearing you say that, again, you don't want your daughter to feel like she's having to come out. You want her to just be able to be who she is. And that's what we find with children in general, but certainly with LGBTQ plus youth, is that the road, the path is harder and mental health outcomes are more negative if they don't have support at home. Because if no one else is going to be on your side or love you or support you out there in the world, but you've got your home, that's what ultimately helps them thrive in the midst of all the BS.
I agree with that. I think, at least for me, on my journey as a human being, one thing that has helped me, and I've been lucky to be able to meet and become friends with and build relationships with a lot of people that are different from me. I didn't understand homosexuality for probably the first 25 years of my life. And then luckily my job here in radio, I got to know some people that identify as homosexual. And to their credit, I mean, I would ask them some wild shit sometimes, but they were always like super cool about it. And they would answer the questions. I'm like, okay, I get that. All right. And then I think when you kind of break that ice, when you get that little crack in the ice a little bit, you start opening your mind to everything else. And so I think once that happened, I was able to kind of understand. I've never had a friend that identified as trans, but I'm open to it. Whereas if you would have caught me when I was 24, 25 years old, I'd probably be like, hell no. You know, I would have been participating in the very behavior now that I find repulsive. But luckily, because I've been lucky enough to be able to be surrounded by a diverse set of people, be it, you know, how are they identify or racially or whatever, my mind is kind of opened up from that. And I think that it's important to have those conversations with your kids because you want your children to be open at a much younger age than I was ever open, right? Like I want my kids growing up with the 42-year-old version of my mind and not the 18-year-old version of my mind, right?
So I think, and again, they're a whole and separate human being.
Yeah.
So who they are is developing. Who we are, even being in our 40s, right? I think we're about the same, right? Like we're developing. We're always developing. If you're not, you're dead. And so we're always changing. And identities are fluid. They can be fluid. Who we love, who we relate to can be fluid. And so why not be able to have the ability to get to relate to, understand, know different people in this world, different experiences that maybe you may not be able to personally relate to, or maybe you, that just may not be for you, but that doesn't invalidate it. That doesn't make it wrong.
My thing is, you don't have to understand, but you should respect. If whatever a person is choosing to do does not harm literally anyone, including themselves, why do you even care? Like, just.
But that's really hard. If you, for example, with religion, if you grew up in a religion where you literally were told, we're going to knock on people's doors to save them from hell. Again, it's the indoctrination. It's that sense that you have the right to control another person's life or outcomes, or that you're entitled to an opinion about what other people are not doing. It's the entitlement.
That's another thing I've gotten pissed off, because I see people all the time like, well, I don't have to agree with it. Who gives a shit if you agree with it? Who asked you anyway? Nobody cares about your...
And that's where my job can come into. I talk a lot about assholes in the anatomy sense, but opinions are like assholes. Everybody's got one. And again, just brings you back to, if you're on this earth and you have the great fortune of being able to raise a young person, it does put you up against really having to put a mirror and take a look at yourself and like, what are the values that I possess? What has shaped me as a human being? What do I believe? What do I not? Why? Where did I learn that? Who taught me that?
Right.
All of that is a constant evolving thing. And when we become parents, we're put in that position to then bestow knowledge. And we're like, we're just trying to figure it out too at the time. So yeah, it's interesting.
Last question before I let you out of here is, I know you're a busy person. So how do you start correcting maybe some things that you should have done if you have like a teenage child now and you did not have these healthy conversations with them early enough?
Again, you got to hit it with some honesty. Introduce what it is that you may want to talk about and come from a place of vulnerability. So it can look like saying, I realize that we've not been talking about a few things that are really important. Make sure you're in a moment that isn't distracted with a lot of things, that isn't rushed, that isn't in reaction to something that has happened that is a negative or a consequence, but truly just time that you all get a chance to kind of bond, connect, where you know you'll have each other's attention, and just say, you know, we haven't talked about some things. Sex is one of those things. And I realize why I haven't brought it up is because I didn't grow up with someone talking to me about this.
Right.
I don't always know what to say when it comes to this, but I do know that I want you to be equipped. I do know that I want you to feel supported. I'd love to be able to talk more about this with you. What do you know already about sex? What have you heard about it? Also trying to depersonalize it. So you don't necessarily want to go in with, have you had sex? Or, you know, depending on your dynamic. But chances are, if they're 15 and you've not talked about any of this before, there's likely a disconnect. There's a gap that's been created with that silence and that shame, that underlying message of shame. And so a child adapts to their world. They know what's inappropriate or safe or triggering or not for their parent or parents. So their silence, especially as they move into the teen years, doesn't equate to they're not curious or they're not thinking about it or they're so innocent. They don't know. Nah. Because even if they aren't engaged in any of that stuff, they know people who are.
Right.
They know the internet, you know, Pornhub, porn, that is very accessible. It's so critical that we are opening up the opportunities. It's not about following a script. It's not about saying just the right things. It's really just about holding space, showing up and creating a space with your young person where they can feel safe and brave enough to talk with you about these things, to be curious about these things. And you can learn together.
Melissa, I love everything you guys do. Sex positive families. Make sure if you're a parent, if you want to become a parent, even if you're not a parent, follow Sex Positive Families. I love what you guys do. I learned so much just by scrolling your page. It's incredible. I can't thank you enough for doing this. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I realize that conversation may have made some of you uncomfortable, so you may be in search of something that brings you comfort, like a new home. Bet you didn't see that segue coming. This episode of the podcast brought to you by my good friend William Wilson of the Hammonds Group. If you're looking for some property here in the state of Tennessee, call my actual friend William Wilson, 615-216-4809. Will go to war for you, whether you're buying, selling, and I guess that's all you can do in real estate is buy or sell. But whether you're buying or selling, William got your back. Call them, 615-216-4809. I want to say thank you once again to my guest, Melissa Pintor-Carnegie of Sex Positive Families. If you don't already follow them on Instagram, seriously, start following ASAP. They're an absolute treasure. Back next week with an all-new episode. My guest is going to be Brian Penny Collins, the head men's basketball coach for Tennessee State University. He'll be on to talk about whether highly recruited black athletes should start choosing HBCUs. Definitely looking forward to that conversation. Don't forget to subscribe or follow or whatever the hell else the platform you're using calls it. Just make sure you get notifications set up to alert you when new episodes drop. As my wife always says, sharing is caring, so I'm definitely appreciative of everybody who shares on their socials. You can follow me at DoleWite101, DoleWite 101 on Instagram, Twitter, Clubhouse, and TikTok. Appreciate your time. Thank you for listening. Back next week with a new episode. I'm out.